I saw the cello on the night of our Christmas party, and I wasn't sure I was ever going to really get to hear it. I thought it was that night, but thanks, Bruce. We, you know, Debbie said it so well. We're just blessed. Stories told of a pastor who was preaching a sermon, and he was talking about the truth that no one is perfect. So in order to prove his point, he made the statement that if anyone is perfect, would you please stand up? One man in the middle of the congregation stood up, and the pastor looked at him and said, "Do you really think you're perfect?" He said, "Oh, no, I'm not perfect." He said, "I'm standing up on behalf of my wife's first husband." It's not everybody's going to get you know, the first husband. It's often times odd when we really stop and think about it that the people with a great amount of possessions are so unhappy. And sometimes just flat out miserable. And when the people that have less seem to be so happy, seem to be so content, seem to be so at peace with themselves, at peace with the world. During the traveling with the ghost of Christmas past present that Scrooge did, his eyes were open to the poverty of people all around him. And as he looked at them, he thought, they don't have much, but they're thankful anyway for what they have. You know, they acknowledge the blessings that they have. Jesus came to turn our world upside down. And that's exactly what he did. He took the person that has a great amount of wealth and prosperity, and in some cases turned their lives upside down. Sometimes people lose everything that they have. I was reminded of that when I saw Wayne this morning, and I said, "How you doing?" He said, "Better than I deserve." And I said, "Dave Ramsey." And Dave Ramsey, in case you are unaware of him, is a guy that's a Christian financial counselor, but he went bankrupt at a young age because he was in debt over his head. And he'll also ask you, if you ask him what he thinks of American Express, he'll tell you he has absolutely no use for it. Because they called his wife one day because he was behind on his payments, and I don't know how you could be married to somebody that doesn't pay their bills. But there's a picture and there's a case of recovery. What Jesus brought about was a change in life to people who had little and gave them everything that they needed. So we're continuing in the series on Scrooge and the redemption of Scrooge to take a look at the abundant gift of Jesus to the world and how that gift is something that we're given and we are really commissioned, I think is a good word, to keep on giving it. It's not something that we just want to take and absorb and keep for ourselves. Luke sets the events of the gospel, and Roger read it earlier, against what is really the background of world history at that time. There was a pagan emperor, a corrupt emperor at the time, who decreed that there was going to be a census taken. In order for that census to be taken, he said everyone needed to go to their homeland. Mary and Joseph head off to Bethlehem. That's why Jesus is born there. It didn't just happen. Took a series of events that God laid out to make those things happen. Moses records that the three magi, or three rich people, were the ones that were in high standing and great notoriety, a great reputation, that's who God revealed the birth of Jesus to. But Luke talks about it as three shepherds. Shepherds were the most lowly occupation that you could ever imagine. not very well thought of, in fact, looked down upon. And yet that's who Jesus, through Luke, chose to reveal the birth of Jesus to. And all through the Bible, we see contradictions. As Roger read, we picture him wrapped in swaddling clothes and think, could this really be the king of the world? Somebody lying in a manger where cattle feed? Could this be the Savior of the world? But then we see his birth attended by choirs of angels and say, well, yeah, it easily could be the king of the world because of the choir of angels that are there. Matthew, we see notice given to the wise men who are Gentiles by a star, and we wonder, why would he tell a Gentile this and not a Jew? And then Luke says, a notice given to the shepherds who were Jews by an angel. So we see God speaking to people in their own language. We see God speaking to people the way they need to be spoken to, but also the way that they need to hear, the way that they need to understand. And so during the Advent season, as we celebrate Christ and we celebrate his birth and we celebrate that greatest gift, we have a tendency to buy gifts for our family. Sometimes it's an overabundance of gifts. As I said last week, sometimes it's an overabundance of spending that people put tons of money on their credit card, which Dave Ramsey would not agree with. But we feel like we want to do so much more. And it was kind of funny, we were talking today, Wayne and Dell and I, about when men go shopping. And Dell said, I go up and down every aisle. And that's the way we do things. I did the same thing the other day. Because you just want to do so much, and it's not on a credit card. But you want to do so much for people, and you want to give them so much. Ever give a gift that you really thought, look back and think, I really don't know why I did that. I really maybe shouldn't have done it. Maybe it was a misplaced gift. Maybe it was the wrong person. But I had this experience a couple years ago. And we, Cindy and I, are always very cautious about buying an equal number of gifts for my nephew and my two nieces and their husbands. Their husbands are my nephew's wife. We're generous, but I mean, you know, but that's beside the point. The point is that I looked around after that to be sure everyone had all their gifts, and one person was one short. And I asked everybody, I said, check and be sure that you've got yours, you know, because I didn't want to make a mistake. And come to find out, the person missing the gift had given that gift away to someone else by mistake. And had the audacity at Christmas to say, well, the next time you come back, can you bring it? You're right. I've been back many times and I have not taken it. Because I thought that was one of those misplaced gifts. And I look at it and I'm thinking, here's a person that could go out and buy a stinking nightlight from Kohl's at 30% off for $7. And that's really what it was. I'm thinking, wow. I don't know. So it makes me think about the Cratchits. Here's a family, you know, that really had nothing, but had everything. Had the love of family, had the love of each other. They had little, but they were thankful for. They understood really what was important. So if we think about it for a minute, and if we really elect to choose the idea, Christmas can really give us the perfect perspective for what Jesus was and for what he expects us to do. So as we, you know, we really stop and think, you know, what it sometimes does is make us stretch ourselves, makes us stretch our perspective on really what Christmas is. But as we look at it and we reflect on our lives within a local church, and I thought that what that perspective does is it helps us look at our fellowship and what we have. It helps us stop and think about what's our prayer life like? Is is it really what it should be? And I can't tell you what it should be. I can tell you what it should be for me. But there's some people that pray going down the road, and that's fine. I don't think God really cares. He just says, talk to me. I want to hear from you. It's the breaking of bread. It's a teaching of word, the word. C.S. Lewis said, isn't it funny how day by day nothing changes? But when you look back, everything is different. And I thought about that. Every day we go through life and we see things change, and it's like it seems just like, you know, yesterday. My dad would have been, on the 15th, 101 years old. And I still remember things about him. I still remember things he said. Some things he said, I wish I could forget. And the way he said some things, I wish I could forget. But life's priorities are sifted and shifted, and what it does, it gives us really a true understanding of the importance of things and stuff and who we are, who you are, who I am to you. It changes that whole perspective. And we begin looking for good in others, because that's really what God has called us to do. And then we need, and I use the term, and I wrote this down, we suddenly are able to overlook an offense more easily. That's what Christ ought to do in the perspective that we have on what he did, because he overlooks a lot of offenses that we do. Think about that. Things that we, as C.S. Lewis said, is we do these things day by day and nothing changes. But when we look back and, you know, over a period of time, it's like, wow, maybe I shouldn't have done that. Or maybe I should have done something different. So at Christmas time, I think we need to take that opportunity to overlook offenses and things that bug us, because in the big scheme of things, it's probably not really important. What's important is what's my relationship with Jesus Christ, what's my relationship with mankind. And like I said, when I talk to people about joining the church, there's three things I'm concerned about. Number one is, what's your relationship with Jesus Christ? Because in the big scheme of things, that's what's important. Will you attend church on a regular basis when you're in town? And will you give? And I don't put a figure on it. And I don't tell them, will you tithe? Because I've talked to so many people who would like to give more than what they can. But it goes back to this idea that some people are so far in debt. Or some people's obligations sometimes just are overwhelming. So we stop and take a look at that. Paul said to the Corinthian church, he said, when I was a child, I talked like a child. I thought like a child. I reasoned like a child. Ever seen a child reason? When I became a man, I put the ways of childhood behind me. For now, we see only reflection as in a mirror. Then we shall see face to face. Now I know in part, then I shall know fully, even as I am now fully known. And so that's what Paul is saying is, when I was a kid, I acted like a kid, but when I became an adult, I grew up, I have a whole new perspective on life. We start seeing things through a squinted eye sometimes. And I don't know, has you ever watched this show, Fixer Upper? With Chip and Jack? It's a cool show, I think. We're not fixing up a house, I'll tell you that. And we're not moving to find one to fix up. No, but maybe a week ago or something, they walked in this house and they were showing these people this house. And it had this hideous blue and white kitchen in it. I don't know if it was tile or what it was. But he was, you know how he is. To me, I think he could probably be a stand-up comedian and pull it off. But he said, you need to look at it like this. And he put two fingers over his eye and he put two over this way. And he said, that doesn't look so bad after all. And that's really what I think Jesus is saying to us in this greatest gift that he has given to us is, it's not so bad after all. It doesn't look that bad. Now I think, you know, some of the, maybe the first people, you know, that God picked to know about his birth were the shepherds, were these lowly guys that had nothing. Humble, poor, working class individuals that probably were more like the Cratchits and the Magi were more like Scrooge. And it talks about the gifts that the three wise men brought. But what gifts does it say that the shepherds brought? They brought obedience because they followed the star. They didn't have anything to bring. They bought themselves. They may not have been eloquent spokesmen for what was about to happen for a baby to turn a world upside down. But yet, as I look back, to me that is a greater impact of seeing those three shepherds who had nothing versus three wise men that had everything. I thought it was interesting when we had the Nicaraguan dinner. There's a lady walked out, and I may have shared this with you before, but I thought about it this week, of how people's priorities and their perspective is so different. When I said to her, she said, this was a wonderful time together. And I said, we have this wonderful time every Sunday morning at 10:30. I told her, I said, you know, church is a place to laugh. Church is a place to cry. Church is a place to rejoice. Church is a place to share. And I said, I would invite you to come join us. Oh, I'm too busy on Sunday morning. And I thought about that. It's a haunting thought, and I could not tell you, I don't remember the lady, but it's a haunting thought that when we stop and think about that aspect of what our lives are, that perspective hadn't been changed. I'm too busy. I'm too busy to do this. I'm too busy to do that. I'm too busy to get involved with God. I'm, you know, just, you know, something else that I've gotten. It's just, I just don't have time. But God shows up in some of the most unlikely places. He showed up in a manger, showed up as a baby, and what he did is he radically turned people's lives upside down. I read this week, it said the angel song, or verse 14 in Luke 8:20 says, it talks about peace on earth, goodwill to men. But the NIV says, on earth, peace to men, and on whom his favor rests. It's probably the most accurate translation from the original Greek language. And so what God is wanting to do at this Christmas season is to bring us his peace, to bring us his security, to bring us his love to show the world. And unfortunately, there are some people out there that are never going to know what peace is. They're never going to know what security is. They're never going to know what it is to love one another. They're never going to know what it is to give love or share love with one another because they're so wrapped up in themselves. And I look around here and I see just the opposite. And really, this is just a picture of part of it. We took 134 gifts to the Salvation Army this year, not counting what we did for Operation Magi. And we took them down there, and I took them down there, and they were wrapped, and they said, well, you shouldn't have wrapped them. And I said, somebody had to wrap them, and they had a toy gun there, and said, we don't like to give toy guns and things like that away. And I'm thinking, that's probably not a bad idea. Where most of these people are getting, you know, these gifts, that's not a bad idea. But I said, I can assure you there are no guns in there. Now, I hope that was an honest statement, because Nancy told me that she looked into most of this stuff and there weren't any guns in there. So, if there were, I'm Paul and Nancy. But they were amazed at, you know, I told them, I said, we're not a huge church. Getting bigger, but we're not a huge church. And there's still 400 and some kids, they said, that they didn't have any sponsors for. And all they, what we were giving them was a coat and a hat, or a coat and a pair of gloves, or a coat and shoes and two toys. And I'm like, you know, so when you stop and think about it, you know, that's not a whole lot of stuff. Those people that need a touch may not necessarily be that homeless person that doesn't have anything. Could be your neighbor. Could be your landlord. Could be your supervisor. Could be a family member. Could be somebody that wanted me to bring a gift back. Or it could be a fifth grade girl who needed a coat. We just never know who needs what. We just never know who needs a coat in 9-degree weather. That's what God's called us to do. That's what our perspective is. So whether we do it with a smile, whether we do it with a dollar, whether we do it with a meal, we do it with a look in our eyes of Jesus. And we do it with a look in our eyes of compassion. John said in Revelation 3:21, he who overcomes the world through believing that Jesus is the Son of God, I will grant to him the privilege to sit beside me on my throne, as I also overcame and I sat down beside my Father on his throne. That star of Bethlehem wasn't the only star that shone that night. We might think it was, but there was a morning star that shone. It was Jesus Christ. And what Jesus wants us to do at Christmas, and wants us to do every day of the week, every moment that we have an obligation, an opportunity to do, is to share that smile, to share a dollar, share a meal, share love, share a coat, whatever it might be. But that's the perspective of what Christmas is. It's taking that greatest gift that God gave us in the form of a baby laying in a cattle feeding trough, and sharing it with the world. Because, as I said last week, or as the Jewish lady said last week, the jerk at the hotel didn't give the mother a room. That was last week's joke. But that's what it's all about. Our believer's destiny and our destiny is an eternal home with God. But it's a shared relationship with him on earth. It's not all about getting to heaven. It's all about what are we doing along that path? What's our perspective? Who are we? What can we do? What are we willing to do? That's the perspective of the greatest gift. Is he radically changed the world, he turned it upside down, that we might have life, and we might have it more abundantly. I know a lot of you are going to spend time with your families this week, and I'm envious, because I'm not going to spend any time with mine until next week. But as we do, think about that perspective, and think about what that relationship is and what that means as we, you know, as we share that. If you have an opportunity, I'm going to certainly invite you and your family to a Christmas Eve service. I know some of you can make it. I know some of you can't. I know obligations are what they are. But it's only about an hour out of one night that we can say something's important, and I'm going to do this. And God will bless that time that you share with other Christians and that you share with your family. God bless you. I love you all.